Chapter 22. Nicodemus walked over to me, his expression somewhat distracted. I realized with a chill that he looked like a man planning his activities for the day. To Nicodemus, I wasn't a person anymore. I was an item on his checklist, a note in his appointment book. He would feel no differently about cutting my throat than he would about putting down a check mark. When he got within arm's reach, I couldn't stop myself from trying to get away from him. I thrashed at the ropes, hanging on to the desperate hope that one of them might break and give me a chance to fight, to run, to live. The ropes didn't break. I didn't get loose. Nicodemus watched me until I'd exhausted myself again. Then he took a handful of my hair and pulled my chin up and back, twisting my head to my right. I tried to stop him, but I was immobilized and exhausted.
"Be still," he said. "I'll make it clean."
"Do you want the bowl, father?"
Deirdre asked. Nicodemus's expression flickered with annoyance. His voice came out tight and impatient.
"Where is my mind today? Porter, bring it to me."
The gray-haired valet opened the door and left the room. A heartbeat later, there was a wheezing grunt, and Porter flew back through the doorway and landed on his back. He let out a pained croak and curled into a fetal position. Nicodemus sighed, turning.
"Bother. What now?"
Nicodemus had looked bored when Anna Valmont emptied her gun into him. When I'd blasted a Nicodemus-shaped dent in the drywall of the hotel, he'd come through it without a ruffled hair. But when he saw the valet laying on the ground before the open door, Nicodemus's face went pale, his eyes widened, and he took a pair of quick steps to stand behind me, his knife at my throat. Even his shadow recoiled, rolling back away from the open door.
"The Jap!"
Nicodemus snarled.
"Kill him!"
There was a second of startled silence, and then the goons went for their guns. The one nearest the door didn't get his weapon out of its holster. Shiro, still in the outfit he'd worn at McAnally's, came through the opening in a flash of black and white and red, his cane in his hand. He drove the end of the cane into Goon A's neck, and the thug dropped to the ground. Goon B got his gun out and pointed it at Shiro. The old man bobbed to his left and then smoothly rolled right. The gun went off, and sparks flew up from two of the walls as the bullet ricocheted. Shiro drew Fidelacius clear of its wooden sheath as he spun closer to the goon, the movement so fast that the sword looked like a blurred sheet of shining steel. Goon B's gun went flying through the air, his shooting hand still gripping it. The man stared at the stump at the end of his arm as blood gouted from it, and Shiro spun again, one heel rising to chin level. The kick broke something in the wounded goon's jaw, and the man collapsed to the damp floor. Shiro had taken out three men in half as many seconds, and he hadn't stopped moving. Fidelacius flashed again, and the chair beneath Deirdre collapsed, spilling her onto the floor. The old man promptly stepped on her wealth of dark hair, whirled the sword, and brought its tip down to rest against the back of Deirdre's neck. The room became almost completely silent. Shiro kept his blade to Deirdre's neck, and Nicodemus did the same to mine. The little old man didn't look like the same person I'd talked to. Not that he had physically changed so much as the sheer presence of him was different. His features hard as stone, weathering the years only to grow stronger. When he had moved, it had been with a dancer's grace, speed, and skill. His eyes flashed with a silent strength that had been concealed before, and his hands and forearms were corded with muscle. The sword's blade gleamed red with blood and torchlight. Nicodemus's shadow edged a bit farther back from the old man. I think the freezing water was blending in with my sudden urge of hope and making me a little loopy. I found myself drunkenly singing, "Speed of lightning, roar of thunder, fighting all who rob or plunder, underdog."
"Be quiet," Nicodemus said.
"You sure?" I asked. "'Cause I could do Mighty Mouse if you'd rather. Underdog had this whole substance use issue anyway."
Nicodemus pressed the knife a bit harder, but my mouth was on autopilot.
"That looked fast. I mean, I'm not much of a fencer, but that old man looked amazingly quick to me." "Did he look that quick to you?" Bet that sword could go right through you and you wouldn't even realize it until your face fell on your feet.
I heard Nicodemus's teeth grind.
Harry, Shiro said quietly. Please.
I shut up and stood there with a knife at my throat, shivering, aching, and hoping. The wizard is mine, Nicodemus said. He's through. You know that. He chose to be part of this.
Yes, Shiro said.
You cannot take him from me. Shiro glanced pointedly at the goons lying on the floor and then at the captive he held pinned down.
Maybe yes, maybe no.
Take your chances with it and the wizard dies. You've no claim of redemption here. Shiro was quiet for a moment.
Then we trade.
Nicodemus laughed. My daughter for the wizard? No. I've plans for him, and his death will serve me as well now as later. Harm her, and I kill him now. Shiro regarded the Denarian steadily.
I did not mean your daughter.
I suddenly got a sick feeling in my stomach. I almost heard Nicodemus's smile. Very clever, old man. You knew I'd not pass the opportunity by.
I know you, Shiro said.
Then you should know that your offer isn't enough, Nicodemus said. Not by half.